The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hey folks, I challenge you to think of at least one thing you no longer do that you wish you could. Do you miss like playing golf, maybe long walks with your spouse, sleeping through the night? Are you ready to start living without pain? My colleagues and friends, Hugh Hewitt, Dennis Prager, Mike Gallagher, have been talking about their own successful experience with Relief Factor, and you can add Eric Metaxas to that list. Relief Factor is changing the lives of tens of thousands of Salem radio listeners by reducing and even eliminating daily aches and pains. ReliefFactor.com is full of great success stories, and now I am on board. For just $19.95, Relief Factor is offering a three-week quick start that could help you live your life with little to no pain. Go to ReliefFactor.com to see testimonials from folks all over the country. I love reading them. Over 70% of those that try Relief Factor continue as a customer. Feel the relief and get back your independence and freedom from the aches and pains of everyday life. Go to ReliefFactor.com. Read the testimonies. I tell all my relatives to take it. ReliefFactor.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show.
But first, two very important questions. Have you ever tried to stack marbles while wearing boxing gloves? Also, did you know that marigolds and geraniums hate each other?
Absolutely.
And now your host, Eric Metaxas.
Hey there, folks. I think most of you did know that. I often on this program talk to shallow, uninteresting people, and usually you turn off the program immediately. Today, folks, I've got a surprise for you. I have a very exciting subject and a very engaging guest and author. I am absolutely thrilled to be sitting here in the studio with my phone still turned on, in the studio with my guest today, Heather McDonald. You may know of her book, The Diversity Delusion, the subtitle, How Race and Gender Pandering Corrupt the University and Undermine Our Culture. Heather McDonald, I am thrilled to have you. Thanks for being here.
Eric, it is such a pleasure and honor. And,
truly it is my honor. This is one of the most important subjects of our time, and there are very few people who are able to deal with it well, much less at the level that you deal with it. Now, on the cover of the book, it's festooned on the back with encomia from amazing people, but on the cover of the book, no one less than Peggy Noonan says, "I read every word Heather McDonald writes and always have. She is brilliant, has tons of guts, and is an inspiration." And to that I say, what does Peggy know? I love Peggy, of course. I want to jump right into the diversity delusion. But before we can jump, I want to get a little bit of your background. We both were undergraduates at Yale. What did you foresee for yourself as an undergraduate or growing up? Did you think you would end up anywhere near where you are now?
Not in the least. I aspired to be a professor. I could think of nothing greater or more noble than passing on this civilizational inheritance. I loved literature. I loved languages. Unfortunately, I wasted a lot of my college career in the throes of a terrible another delusion, which was a literary theory called deconstruction.
You are kidding me.
I was at Yale at the height.
Can I ask you when you were there?
I graduated in 78, so I studied with Paul DeMond.
Right before me. The Gang of Four.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, that is honestly hilarious and funny and amazing and tragic and interesting, because I was there at the same time. And I have to say, when I got to Yale, like a lot of people, as an English major, I thought, I'm excited to read literature and
right.
I'm excited about Western civilization and the canon. And I realized none of them was excited about it, or they were somehow creating a universe in which the canon didn't exist, except for Harold Bloom.
Well, so you were one of these preternaturally wise undergraduates who rejected it from the start?
I can't say that I rejected it because of my wisdom. In a funny way.
Well, yes, your common sense.
Well, let's put it this way. I was raised in a working class background where we didn't really read very much. And
yeah.
So to my mind, I was not educated enough to be dumb enough to believe in deconstruction?
Well, I was just pure dumb, and it seemed like it was the hottest thing going. It was a dangerous secret knowledge.
It was the hottest thing going, you know.
And I got sucked in because I'd always been interested in language. It purported to be a theory of language that had a quite perverse set of conclusions, which is that language always fails, meaning breaks down, and most preposterously, that the self is a mere fiction, a construct of language. Now, I would disagree with you on one point, Eric. It was not yet breaking down the canon. Then this is the great irony of the history of the sad, tragic, declinist history of literary studies post-deconstruction. In fact, the gurus of this phony theory, whether it's Paul de Man or Jacques Derrida, read exclusively the canon. They read it with a perverse approach and a perverse set of conclusions. But I feel fortunate in one thing, in that I was at Yale in the 70s before multiculturalism hit, before feminism hit. So I had the privilege to read, and if you were an English major, you did too in English 25, Chaucer, Edmund Spenser, John Milton, William Wordsworth, and then Wallace Stevens, without anybody, including my professor, Margaret Ferguson, ever thinking to put into my head the poison of rejecting those authors on the preposterous grounds of their gonads and melanin. So we read the great works. We read it with a strange approach. But it wasn't until the 80s that you had this strange, it was in a way, it was a reversal of deconstruction, because deconstruction had held that the self was a fiction. What is multiculturalism, identity politics all about? But a resurgence of the self to the point of blinding narcissism, so that now students only want to study themselves.
You're almost talking over the heads of everyone who ever lived, but there are people listening now, I know. And I'm almost one of them, who are tracking perfectly with what you say. There's so much in what you say. I want to unpack it. And I hate the term unpack it. And there I've said it. But seriously, Heather, you've said it's what we're talking about is so important. And it leads in its way to everything that we're dealing with.
Yes,
now,
this
including
is the
diversity delusion, this issue that you deal with, how race and gender pandering corrupt the university, undermine our culture. But it's fascinating to me because I was at Yale in the early 80s, and you can imagine coming from a working class, you know, European immigrant home, to bump into this world, this strange world of structural criticism and stuff, and just think, what nonsense, really what nonsense? I mean, if I'm going to read a Victorian novel, please don't bother me with, you know, Marxist criticism or something like that. And I have to say that the larger issue for me is the deep issues of meaning. In other words, at a place like Yale, they had already sort of determined that there's no meaning, the universe is meaningless, or whatever it is. And these were all different kinds of outworkings of that. So if you were in the sciences, in the hard sciences or something, you didn't bump into this nonsense yet.
Right.
But now...
Now you do. I mean, now, this is the real scary thing, Eric. This is why people have to pay attention to what's going on in the universities, and don't dismiss this as just a bunch of, now the term is snowflakes, or, you know, I would say narcissist is a much better term. The identity obsession that reduces everything, first of all, to race and gender, and for the purpose of saying that America is endemically bigoted on those grounds, is now taking over the sciences. So you have,
which is amazing,
the federal government itself, and this is continuing, I'm sad to say, under the Trump administration, awarding grants to the science fields to study so-called microaggressions and heteronormativity in mathematics.
You know what this reminds me of? I mean, I wrote a big biography of Dietrich Bonhoeffer, so I know a little bit about what happened during the Third Reich. And when you wonder how is it possible that the great scientists of that day themselves fell into quote-unquote Nazi theories of science. Mm-hmm. That a madness took over a great culture in the 30s at that time, and we're witnessing something very similar. I mean, the idea that crackpot theories, there's no other way to put it, would take over some of the finest minds in a culture. And then the question, of course, is where is it going to go here? We know where it went there.
Right.
Thank God they were defeated militarily. Let's leap into your book. Otherwise, we'll be talking about Harold Bloom for 3 days, which I wouldn't mind. But and by the way, he just passed away. But your book, The Diversity Delusion, what is the principal thesis for people just tuning in?
Well, I identified three principles that I associate with the diversity delusion, and I've already semi-alluded to them. First principle is that the most important thing about any individual is his race and gender. Second, that discrimination based on those characteristics is the defining feature of America in particular and Western civilization in general.
Right.
And third, that any absence of proportional representation in any institution is by definition the result of bigoted discrimination, not as an alternative explanation, differences in academic skills, differences in preferences, differences in culture.
Forgive me for hitting pause. Folks, we're going to go to a break. We'll be right back with Heather McDonald.
Hi, this is Dennis Prager, and we just launched a new Pragertopia membership called Pragertopia Unlimited. Members can listen to any and all audio programs that are in the Dennis Prager store. That's over 400 programs to choose from. Show segments, talks, lectures, courses, even full access to all 5 books of my Torah teaching. For a limited time, an annual Pragertopia Unlimited membership is only $119. Join Pragertopia Unlimited today. Go to Pragertopia.com.
Guess what? Right now is the perfect time to get your house ready for the winter so you can sit back and enjoy the holidays. Home Advisor can help get you started. Home Advisor matches you to the right pro for the job in seconds. You can read reviews and even book appointments online. Home Advisor can help with any home project, big or small, painting, plumbing, even remodeling. So why wait? Go to HomeAdvisor.com or download the free app to get started on your next project.
Home Advisor.
Guys, waking up over and over to urinate is not okay. But now, you can reduce those nighttime bathroom trips with the ingredients in Super Beta Prostate P3 Advanced. We're talking about less urges to urinate at night, less bathroom trips during the day, and better bladder emptying.
It's like taking 3 prostate supplements in one.
You can try a full 30-day bottle of P3 Advanced, free. Just pay shipping and handling. No strings attached, no obligations, and no commitments to buy. This is a 30-day supply, absolutely free. Call 1-800-424-8908. Super Beta Prostate is the best-selling brand in major retailers like Walmart. But for this no-strings-attached free bottle, you must call now. Call 1-800-424-8908. Don't miss out on this unprecedented free offer. 1-800-424-8908. 1-800-424-8908.
Hey, Albin.
Yeah.
Have you ever had problems with bath towels? Like, you use the towel, and it seems to move the water around. It doesn't exactly suck it up. It doesn't absorb.
I've had that problem.
But Mike Lindell, the genius who invented MyPillow, noticed this problem. He said something happened in 2006 where towels changed, and they started importing them and adding all these softeners and things to make the cotton feel good when you buy it. But then the towels themselves would not work.
What?
Insane, right?
Yeah.
He solved the problem. He created new towels. I have used them. They are spectacular. They do their job. You can get a 6-piece set, 2 bath towels, 2 hand towels, 2 washcloths made with cotton from the United States of America. Soft yet extremely absorbent. You got to go to the MyPillow.com website. Click on the new radio listener specials, and you get deep discounts on all MyPillow products, including the towels. But you have to enter the promo code Eric or Metaxas or call 800-978-3057. MyPillow.com. Use the code Eric. Don't forget.
Hi, this is Dennis Prager, and you've heard me talking about the movie No Safe Spaces, which is a great movie, and it is about the crisis of America, the crisis, free speech.
You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say will be used against you.
You are not listening.
I want your job to be taken from you.
A protest has turned violent at California, Berkeley.
This is why we're fighting for the soul of America. Before the movie, we wrote the No Safe Spaces book. The book is a documentation and a fascinating one about what is happening to free speech in America and especially on campuses. We have a limited number of autographed copies of the No Safe Spaces book in the Prager store. It's valuable reading. Once you pick it up, you won't put it down. Get your autographed copy of the No Safe Spaces book in the Prager store. Go to PragerStore.com.
Actually, I did know that, Elton. I'm talking to Heather McDonald. She is the celebrated best-selling author of many books, including the one in front of me now, The Diversity Delusion, How Race and Gender Pandering Corrupt the University and Undermine Our Culture. The word pandering, what a great word, because it's precisely what it is, and I don't hear people use that word. Let me just ask you, if people are to be defined by race and gender, as they seem to be increasingly, where do people get that from? Like, I'm always fascinated when people sort of by fiat declare, this is the new reality, this is what is important. Says who?
Interesting. Well, I think the roots of it is with the false turn that unfortunately the civil rights movement took in the 60s. Which was to swerve away from the ideal of colorblindness into a embrace of group identity and an unwillingness to pursue those ideals of integration. And we started on the path, sadly, of vast racial preferences in colleges, admitting students with the best of intentions who were simply not qualified for that particular institution. It's not as if black students shouldn't go to college, but they should not suffer under the handicap of being catapulted into an academic environment for which they're not prepared.
And that
resulted in the creation, since these students were not keeping up, whether it was at Cornell or at Yale, the demand at gunpoint of ethnic studies departments that made being black a qualification or an accomplishment in itself.
That is so politically incorrect. You realize we air on MSNBC. Just kidding. Okay, so what we're talking about, though, there are two terms you could probably use. Both of them are evil. One is social engineering, which this is, I would argue. Okay, and the other is cultural Marxism. In other words, the idea that we no longer say, okay, we're going to divide people up according to, you know, the proletariat. And we're now going to divide them up in this other way. But it has the same effect because there's something reductive and fatalistic. And I guess I, as a Christian, would say that it to reduce people in that way is really wicked, because any fool should know that we're at least more than aggregations of atoms or something like that, or you know, your pigment, or that there's something beautiful and ineffable about human beings. And so this project to reduce people like this is it's reductive to the point of fatalistic, and I would say wicked.
Well, I totally agree, and I would actually prefer the old kind of Marxism to what we've got now, because that at least is interesting. You know, if you're talking about railroad workers versus the capitalists versus the farmers. Yeah. Those are occupations. Those are things that people have actually accomplished.
Yeah.
I don't regard, Eric, being female as an accomplishment. I don't regard it as particularly interesting. Nothing necessarily flows from it except for my biological ability to have children and, frankly, my capacity to mother, and I would say your capacity to be a father, something that is sadly demeaned and denigrated in our culture today. But as far as being able to know something about a person based on these trivialities of gonads and melanin, it doesn't follow. I know conservative blacks and liberal blacks. I know conservative whites and liberal whites. Nevertheless, we have this preposterous Supreme Court jurisprudence around racial preferences that talks about diversity as the as the grounds for having these vast academic achievement gaps in admissions. And all the black students complain because, you know, in their history course, all eyes turn upon them for the black perspective on civil rights. And they resent this. But frankly, under our current regime, that's precisely why you've been admitted, is because we assume that there is a black perspective on history, just as there's a women's perspective on reading, say, Renaissance poetry, something that I reject.
I actually remember the first time I bumped into this was in my freshman year before I transferred to Yale. I was at Trinity College in Hartford, and I was part of this guided studies, you know, sort of like an honors humanities program. And one afternoon, we were led to a poetry reading. I forget the name of the poet, but she became kind of famous. But it was an African-American woman, and I was 17 years old, you know, grew up in working-class circumstances, but I could feel that I was being treated like an elite white kid at an elite institution who needed to hear this other perspective. In other words, I could feel myself being treated that way. Mm-hmm. And of course, my mother may have been cleaning houses to pay my tuition while I was sitting there listening to this preposterous poetry.
Yeah.
But that's the first time I bumped into that, because it does cut both ways. The moment you deify one race or one gender, you're putting the other one down. And a zero-sum game strikes me as a conservative as being fundamentally wrong. It's not just that I don't like it. It's wrong.
Right. Well, you're absolutely right. This is not a celebratory enterprise. This is an enterprise of anger, resentment, and ultimate nihilism and destruction. I'm not going to say nihilistic from a moral point of view. I think one thing that conservatives get wrong about the left is to claim that they are relativists and that they don't have values. That's not true. They are little Savonarolas when it comes to enforcing political correctness.
Well, yes, except that it's sort of, the idea is that to a point, to be a utopianist, right, to want to immanentize the eschaton, there's virtue in it initially. But we all know that it leads to nihilism, right? In other words, like the idea that I can remake the world, and the way I will do it through social engineering and it leads to what Stalin did. It leads to that kind of thing. It begins as a virtuous utopianist idea, but it ends in forced famine, for example.
Possibly so. But I mean, right now, I don't think we even need to speculate as to where it ends. We're in the middle of something very bad already, which is something that is, apart from possibly the Chinese Cultural Revolution, unprecedented in human civilization, for a civilization to turn on itself with this much hatred, this much ignorance. What we hear from the left every day is that the project of the West is nothing but oppression. To the contrary, as you well know, Eric, this has been the civilization that is the best hope for liberating mankind from oppression. We are the source of those ideas of equality and tolerance that the left then weaponizes against us. And how a civilization can continue with this much hatred for itself is a big question.
Oh, it cannot.
It cannot.
No, there's no question that it will not. And we have to turn the tide. It's why we're doing this interview, because
right.
It's fun to help people understand what is happening. And there's so many people who see it, but they don't have the vocabulary to really understand what exactly is happening. It is like the Chinese Cultural Revolution, but maybe they don't know about that. I want to ask you, how did you get to the point, because you talk about, you know, being sucked in at Yale, drinking the Kool-Aid. I, too, drank the Kool-Aid at Yale in other ways, in terms of the multiculturalism and the political correctness, which had infected the
Okay,
you
so you had your own blindness.
Tremendously.
I see.
And
so
I drifted into, you know, whatever-ism. But my question is, what happened to you? What's your story of how you got past that eventually?
Well, it took me a very long time to free myself of the theory bug. I still felt like this was an interesting and somehow fruitful approach. I pursued more literary studies at Cambridge and then went to law school, not because I wanted to be a lawyer, but because I still was interested in these questions of interpretation of hermeneutics, you know, as you well know, as a religious scholar, questions of how you approach texts, how you find meaning. This was the whole leftist deconstruction, although I take back leftism because, I don't think Paul DeMond was leftist, but I get into the arcana here.
And which of the four was Nazi? I can't remember.
Well, DeMond, but that was, I think, kind of a ad hominem.
Overstatement.
Not a relevant charge.
Then.
Okay, but anyway, the deconstruction went into legal studies. So I went to law school to study, questions of interpretation and in the law, how we read the Constitution. Is there such a thing as authorial intent? Then I started yearning to go back to academia. I wanted to read literature again. Every time I looked back in and checked out graduate school, because I had started a PhD at Yale in comparative literature and realized these people are nuts. Like, Paul DeMond is certifiably crazy. What he is talking about Shelley, he's obsessed with decapitation and mutilation. This is madness. But I found that every time I looked back, it had gotten worse and worse and worse.
I have to hit pause again. Folks, I know I don't have to tell you to stick around because you'd be a fool not to. I'm talking to Heather McDonald.
With SRN News, I'm John Scott. A second victim of the Los Angeles area high school shooting has died. Los Angeles County Sheriff Alex Villanueva says a 14-year-old boy died at a hospital earlier. A 16-year-old girl had died from a shooting at Saugus High School in the city of Santa Clarita. The three surviving victims remain hospitalized. The shooter, who shot himself, is in grave condition. Republican Governor Matt Bevin will not contest results showing Democrat Andy Beshear winning Kentucky's three-way governor's race. Bevin trailed Beshear by just over 5,000 votes, but the third-party candidate, John Hicks, a Libertarian, garnered more than 28,000 votes, or 2% of that total. And the El Paso, Texas Walmart, where 22 people were killed in a mass shooting back in August, has reopened. The Dow is down 4 points. This is SRN News.
If your family depends on your income and something happened to you, what would happen to them? You need life insurance, and SelectQuote can help you get it at a price you can afford.
SelectQuote found Jacob, 40, who's in excellent health, a 10-year, $500,000 policy for only $19 a month.
Not in perfect health? Don't worry.
SelectQuote found Tanya, 40, who has type 2 diabetes, a 10-year, $500,000 policy for only $32 a month.
We shop companies like Protective, Prudential, American General, and others to find you the company with the best rates. Give your family the security they need at a price you can afford.
For your free quote, call 1-800-880-7474. That's 1-800-880-7474. Or go to SelectQuote.com. That's 1-800-880-7474.
SelectQuote. We shop, you save.
Get full details on the example policies at selectquote.com/commercials. Your premium could vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors. Not available in all states.
The following is not an actor, but a real-life story from Trinity Debt Management.
I was between jobs, and we had over $64,000 in credit card debt.
If you're in debt and you need help, call Trinity at 1-800-990-6976.
Working with Trinity was extremely easy. They really guided us into the program and gave us hope.
Trinity will consolidate your accounts into one easy-to-manage monthly payment, reduce your interest, and possibly improve your credit score. You'll save thousands.
My advice to people in a similar situation is to pick up the phone and call and get out of debt. The freedom from that is priceless. Let Trinity help make it better. Don't feel that you have to suffer alone or try to figure out the answer.
Call Trinity at 1-800-990-6976. That's 1-800-990-6976.
Discussions that range from My goodness. Where do you get programs where you hear electric like orchestra and then you talk about Harold Bloom or J. Hillis Miller? It simply doesn't happen. We haven't talked about J. Hillis Miller. I took one course. He seemed to me the sanest of the four maniacs of the Gang of Four. Uh-huh. I don't know. But you were saying that you'd gone to law school.
Right. So I went
to law
school.
So you're still kind of stuck on this idea.
I'm still wanting to get back into academia.
Right,
I realize
right.
I can't go back again. So I was so mad at having wasted my college education on this absolutely crazy theory of deconstruction that my goal was to write the definitive refutation. And I was collecting index cards on the craziest things Paul DeMond had ever said. And I never did that, but I started writing about multiculturalism. I started writing about postmodernism for places like Saul Mugundy, Partisan Review, The New Criterion, because although I had been sucked into this theory, I still loved literature. I still understood that we should be down on our knees in gratitude, something we were speaking with before these works, that none of us are worthy of. None of us are worthy of this language of such sublimity. So I started writing about the attack on our culture, but I also started doing actual reporting. I'd never done journalism, and I was asked to write about the involuntary commitment of the mentally ill. It became the Giuliani years in New York, our mayor, Rudolph Giuliani, who was one of the greatest mayors of New York, who took on...
Whatever happened to him?
He's gone nuts.
Okay, well, let's not talk about that. That was a rhetorical question, Heather. During Giuliani years, they were incarcerating people because we had tons of street people in New York, mentally ill people, right? And so you're saying that you observed the Giuliani administration was... Putting them away.
Well, yeah, but I observed Giuliani single-handedly taking on the welfare establishment, taking on the anti-police establishment, bringing safety to a city that had been written off by the entirety of the establishment.
I mean, it's so monumental what he did. It's like Churchill in World War II. You can't even believe it. Can we really believe that happened, that one person was able to do what he did, which is now rather quickly being undone by Mayor de Blasio. But we never mentioned his name. I mean, it is an amazing thing. So you were able to appreciate that. You'd taken an intellectual journey. I see. That's really what happened.
Yeah, I had been a default liberal, which is what one is if you don't think your way out of the default assumptions of our culture. And so I started doing reporting with really sort of a blank slate. If anything, you know, liberal assumptions about welfare being necessary and people being absolute victims of circumstance as opposed to victims of their own bad personal choices, the most prominently having children out of wedlock, which is the guarantee of poverty in the United States and the driver of poverty in the United States. If you want to solve poverty and you're not talking about fathers, forget it. You're just going to waste another $1 trillion of taxpayer money. So I would go to homeless shelters, I would go to welfare offices, and I would hear from the recipients themselves things like, they should have done this welfare reform decades ago. Now, this is a welfare mother talking. It's not Ronald Reagan, you know, with his welfare mothers in Cadillacs. Welfare mothers saying, these welfare mothers are so lazy they can't even change the 40-watt bulb in their room, or they're having more kids just to increase their welfare check. I heard a homeless guy in a shelter around Grand Central Terminal saying, you should never get on government aid. It's a narcotic. It will destroy you. So I started moving away from my involvement with the humanities and writing about more public policy issues and got very involved in the dangerous attack on the police. But ultimately, I have returned in this book to what remains the core function of my life or interest of my life, which is a belief in this our Western civilizational inheritance and both a sorrow and a rage to see it under so much attack.
Well, you say it so beautifully, and I agree so much that it's almost painful. So let's be more specific. You, in the book, The Diversity Delusion, you specifically deal with how race and gender pandering, in the subtitle, corrupt the university and undermine our culture. Do you think, at least I do a little bit, that that these things have a reductio ad absurdum attached to them, that if you're fighting against the nature of reality itself, at some point it can't work. And so to have young men trouncing young women in track meets, because the young men claim to be women in Connecticut, the madness is so obvious and so huge that it seems to me it simply begins to kill itself. If you have women are now being pitted against the transgender movement. Yeah. So you've got, you know, we've divided everybody up, and they were all together on the fact that we're all divided up. And now we have different versions fighting each other and stuff. And don't you think that that's kind of baked into reality, although it needs a lot of help from people like you?
Well, I actually have a bet riding on that, and you'll be surprised to know, Eric, I'm betting against reality. I tried to quantify it in 5 years. I was with a libertarian from Reason, and he's of your opinion that this cannot last. I'm a pessimist by nature. People have been saying the madness will end, for the last 2 decades,
right,
and it hasn't. I would have thought, before we even got to the sports, that when you told even the most liberal of mothers that her daughter was going to be in a bathroom with a biological male, they would say enough.
Now I have to hit pause again. Forgive me. This is radio. We're going to be right back with Heather McDonald. She'll finish that sentence. Hey, folks, Eric Metaxas here. I know full well that if you're in any kind of pain, maybe back or neck pain, shoulder, hip or knee pain, you have some options. For example, you have Relief Factor, a 100% drug-free supplement that helps your body deal with and prevent and even lower inflammation. Or I suppose you could rub all kinds of goop all over the parts of your body that hurt and do that a few times a day. And of course, you can use over-the-counter drugs or even prescriptions. We know about those. So let me ask you, why do you think tens of thousands of people like me are now taking Relief Factor every day? Well, I think it's because they're in less or no pain. In fact, I've gotten to know Pete and Seth Talbot, the father-son owners of Relief Factor, and that's why they created the 3-week quick start pack to make it as easy and as inexpensive as possible to get you out of pain too. They're on a mission to get you out of pain, and I have joined them. Order the 3-week quick start pack for just $19.95. It can be at your door in just 2 to 3 days. You have to go to relieffactor.com. That's relieffactor.com. Most people who order the 3-week quick start pack continue to take it because it works. That's why I take it.
Hello, neighbor.
This Thanksgiving,
it's a beautiful day in this neighborhood, a beautiful day for a neighbor.
Based on the true story of the friendship between Mr. Rogers and a cynical journalist.
You love broken people like me.
Sometimes we have to ask for help, and that's okay.
Starring Tom Hanks and Matthew Rhys, A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested. In theaters November 22nd. For tickets and showtimes, go to resources.abeautifulday.movie.
Hey, Mike, how's the house coming along?
Needs a ton of work. The pipes are leaking. Needs a new roof. The AC just broke. I just don't have time to do it all myself. You know anyone?
Oh, just ask Home Advisor. They match you with the best local pros for any home project.
Cool.
Yeah, you can read reviews and book appointments online.
What's it cost?
Actually, Home Advisor is always free to use.
Nice. I'll check it out.
Go to homeadvisor.com or download the free app.
Home Advisor.
Hi, this is Dennis Prager, and you've heard me talking about the movie No Safe Spaces, which is a great movie, and it is about the crisis of America, the crisis, free speech.
You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say will be used against you.
You are not listening.
I want your job to be taken from you.
A protest has turned violent at California Berkeley.
This is why we're fighting for the soul of America.
Before the movie, we wrote the No Safe Spaces book. The book is a documentation and a fascinating one about what is happening to free speech in America and especially on campuses. We have a limited number of autographed copies of the No Safe Spaces book in the Prager store. It's valuable reading. Once you pick it up, you won't put it down. Get your autographed copy of the No Safe Spaces book in the Prager store. Go to PragerStore.com.
A few years ago, my wife and I couldn't find great bedding in any stores. So we founded our own company. I'm Scott Tannen, the founder of Boll & Branch, the world's most comfortable sheets. My wife Missy and I spent months developing the super soft, organic cotton fabric we're now known for. Since then, we've helped millions of people, including 3 U.S. presidents, get a great night's sleep. You could compare them to $1,000 sheets, but we sell them for a fraction of the price because spending that much on sheets is bonkers. Right now, check out our luxury flannel collection. It sells out every year. That's because Bull & Branch flannel is cozy but breathable. Cool sleepers and hot sleepers all love it. You can try us risk-free for 30 nights, but I think it'll only take one to convince you. And right now, get $50 off at bullandbranch.com with promo code CALM. That's spelled B-O-L-L and branch.com. Promo code CALM. Save $50 at bullandbranch.com with promo code CALM. Bullandbranch.com, promo code CALM.
So I'd like to know when you got the notion. Said I'd like to know when you got the notion. Rock the boat.
I don't rock the boat, baby.
Rock the boat.
I don't tip the boat over.
Hey
folks, I'm talking to a boat rocker, Heather McDonald. The book is The Diversity Delusion, How Race and Gender Pandering Corrupt the University and Undermine Our Culture. You were just saying you thought that parents would flip out, you know, when boys and girls were in the same locker room. I remember this began when I was at Yale. In my senior year at Yale, they forced us in the dorms to live together. And I remember thinking, this is bizarre.
Yeah.
The idea that a modest young woman, you know, from suburban Connecticut would have to share a bathroom with a gigantic, smelly jock. It's a repulsive idea that Yale University foisted this on, let's face it, the parents who were footing the bill. They didn't care. But, you just see this over and over and over again. So you're a pessimist. You're not betting that it's going to.
Well,
what happens at the Olympics, Heather?
We haven't seen it yet. I mean, you can see on the faces of these student athletes sometimes a certain amount of disgruntlement and resentment. But so far, with a few exceptions,
right.
Martina Navratilova, the feminists have been absolutely silenced by this. And my hypothesis, because it is so bizarre, you know, we've been hearing about the need for massive Title IX spending for female college sports. And here, their success is being, they're never going to beat a male track record. From now on, females are never going to beat that. It's quite extraordinary. My hypothesis, because this is, I think, the strangest feature of our time, trying to understand the trans phenomenon. If you can understand it, I think you will have unlocked something deep about what's going on. I think that even though it's a short-term loss for females, that in the long term, this is about pursuing the feminist revolution, which is to deny biological differences between males and females. So they're willing to take some losses on the track field, in bicycling, you name it, in order to further their agenda of saying that there can be no real distinctions between males and females. And if there are differences in institutional outcomes, it must be because of discrimination.
Yes, you're right. I mean, all of this goes deeper, of course. I mean, it's I would argue that it's connected to the wanting to unmake reality, that there's something offensive about reality. And that, for example, the complementarity of the sexes, that there's something that it rubs people the wrong way, certain people the wrong way. And they say, no, we can do it. It's another utopianist scheme because it says nothing matters. We can do anything. We can reach heaven. We can build a Tower of Babel. We can get there ourselves. There's nothing we can't do. I mean, turning a man into a woman or a woman into a man, we know it's basically ridiculous and cannot happen, but it's almost like those boundaries themselves are rejected.
Yeah, I think that leaves out the hatred that's involved. I don't think it's an innocent utopian project.
Oh, no, I didn't mean
it
that.
It is something that is based in resentment towards a civilization seen as too white and too male.
But I would argue, I mean, I agree with you. I think it's both. In other words, on the one hand, it's like saying, is it Savonarola or are they relativists? It's a little bit of both. I mean, depending on what works today, right? I mean, I will be a blue-nosed Puritan, and I will make you feel bad about using plastic straws. And so I will be a moralist and a Pharisee over those things. But, you know, when it comes to sexual behavior or whatever it is, I'll be an absolute relativist. And I will say that there are no such things as boundaries. And Margaret Mead, you know, proved it a million years ago. And it's just, so these are social constructs. So it's almost like they don't care how it works or how they get there. But it's a, you know, so it's a project. Some of them may believe, you know, like the hippies did. We're going to make a better world, man. Right. And some people really did mean to do that. Other people just wanted to have drugs and sex, and they knew they were kind of winking their way through it. And I think that that's the same thing today.
Yeah, the difficulties I've always had with that explanation, which is to say this is sort of a utopian delusion, is that conservatives, too, have wanted progress. I mean, maybe not to the same fundamental degree, but certainly they've believed in changing government structures. There's
right.
been some very radical revolutions that were done in the name of what we would now say conservative values. I'm actually not sure I would have been on the side of the American revolutionaries, because I think that civil order is very important. So I may have been a royalist back then. But in any case, you know, everybody has a belief in progress. I think what's going on here again is something that is much more narrow, much more constricting. And to get back to the point about what's going on with this bizarre trans thing and the women's lib thing, I think that is a attempt by the females who came out of the 60s to further the perverse ideals of sexual liberation and to destroy sexual innocence. So you talk about the strange thing of having college students be in the same bathroom together
right.
and destroying innate female modesty, which
right.
is an extraordinarily powerful and positive virtue.
Although not the sort of thing that we ever discuss. I mean, no one ever, the idea of chastity
and modesty and prudence,
I do in that book,
believe me.
But it's like talking about virtue. No
exactly.
one ever discusses these things.
Right.
They're dirty words. They're actually offensive to
right.
people.
Right, but this is one thing. At a college level, they are now forcing this on children in kindergarten to give them, it's like the fruit of knowledge in the Garden of Eden, the premature knowledge of sexuality. Because if you're going to instruct them about trans, and somebody from the Spence School here in New York City, a very elite, very expensive private girls' school, sent me this sheet that I think is probably national now, called the Genderbread Man. So it's a cute little icon of a gingerbread man with signs about where the genitalia are. Well, this is biological sex. This is gender. This is psychological sex. You are destroying that child's innocence. You are stripping him of something that is so precious, which is life before sexuality.
We're going to hit pause again. This is heavy stuff, man. Important stuff. We'll be right back.
Evil on his mind, 'cause he's been peeking in Angie's room at night through her window blind. I see you folks have gone away.
Guys, waking up over and over to urinate is not okay. But now, you can reduce those nighttime bathroom trips with the ingredients in Super Beta Prostate P3 Advanced. We're talking about less urges to urinate at night, less bathroom trips during the day, and better bladder emptying.
It's like taking three prostate supplements in one.
You can try a full 30-day bottle of P3 Advanced, free. Just pay shipping and handling. No strings attached, no obligations, and no commitments to buy. This is a 30-day supply, absolutely free. Call 1-800-424-8908. Super Beta Prostate is the best-selling brand in major retailers like Walmart. But for this no-strings-attached free bottle, you must call now. Call 1-800-424-8908. Don't miss out on this unprecedented free offer. 1-800-424-8908. 1-800-424-8908.
With SRN News, I'm John Scott. A second victim of a Los Angeles area high school shooting has died, a 14-year-old boy dying at the hospital. Earlier, a 16-year-old girl died from the shooting at Saugus High School in the city of Santa Clarita. The three surviving victims remain hospitalized. The shooter, who shot himself, is in grave condition. Republican Governor Matt Bevin says he will not contest results showing Democrat Andy Beshear winning the Kentucky governor's race.
Bevin made the dramatic announcement Thursday at the state capitol. On the same day, election officials across Kentucky double-checked vote totals. Last week's election results showed Bevin trailing Beshear by more than 5,000 votes of more than 1.4 million cast for a lead of less than 0.4 percentage points.
That's correspondent Bernie Bennett. The third-party candidate in the race pulled more than 28,000 votes for 2% of the total. The Dow is ahead 6 points, the NASDAQ down fractionally. This is SRN News.
Bastian Gorka here. Maybe you've been hearing about Relief Factor, the 100% drug-free supplement that helps a person's body deal with inflammation and pain. You've heard all the wonderful testimonials. Well, I have my own testimonial. For many years, my lower back pain was becoming a serious problem. The short story is, I finally gave it a try, and now I'm out of pain too. So if you're in pain, you can order the 3-week quick start for just $19.95. Go to relieffactor.com.
Take advantage of Black Friday deals going on now at Lowe's. You'll find savings throughout the store to help you get your home ready in time for the holidays. Like up to 40% off select appliance special values, including a Whirlpool fingerprint-resistant stainless steel electric range with frozen bake technology for $125 less, now $674. Plus, get up to 40% off washers, dryers, refrigerators, and more. Whatever updates you need to make this holiday season, do it right for less. Start with Lowe's. Offers valid through 12/5, U.S. only.
Folks, just a few minutes left in this hour talking to Heather McDonald. We will lock the doors and force her to continue talking to me. The book is The Diversity Delusion. And we're talking about so many different things. You were just talking about the transgender thing with little kids. But what fascinates me is when you talk about the innocence of childhood, for example, mm-hmm. right? Now, that's something that I know that I understand and I value. But it's the sort of thing that, unless you have a particular worldview, it's a non-issue. It doesn't exist. If we evolved out of the primordial soup by random mutations and got here by accident and life literally has no meaning, then all these things, this idea of childhood or premature sexualization, these are categories we invented, right? I mean, these are not – how do we I believe, obviously, that I believe in these things. But I guess my question is, how do you get there? Because nobody in the academic world is talking about, chastity, about the innocence of young people and that. It's just no longer something that seems to exist in the culture.
Uh-huh. Well, I get there sort of empirically by noticing what works and what happens when you destroy those norms. Which is a tragedy for our civilization. I think there's a vast cultural hole in America's soul right now. You see that with the drug use, and you see that with
suicide.
Children.
Yeah.
Yeah, and children being raised without fathers. This is a particularly acute problem in the Black community, but sadly it's spreading more broadly now. This leads to crime and delinquency. So I guess in some respects I have sort of a Burkean view of how societies evolve, which is that there are certain norms that work, that have arisen. And so, again, like I would say our problem is not an absence of meaning. I say it's a surfeit of meaning. I don't see how anybody that can live in the same universe as Chopin and Mozart and Tiepolo and Mark Twain can say there's any absence of meaning. But we are now determined to destroy those things and replace them with things of much less depth, much less worth, much less accomplishment, much less craft, on the assumption that all somebody needs to do to be an artist today is simply express their own grievances without ever learning even how to draw, how to represent things, and do an installation at the Whitney Biennial, and that will...
Can you even imagine? It's just so great to sit here with somebody who can sneer with me at the Whitney Biennial. I mean, it is It's mind-blowing that people take this stuff seriously.
I know, I know.
And I mean, all you have to do is read Tom Wolfe's The Painted Word, a very slim volume where he talks about what happened to art in the 20th century in a way, and you can see through this stuff. But millions of people have been sucked into this.
Yeah.
And they seem, I mean, we're out of time. We're going to go, we're going to keep going, Heather. But in the meantime, let me just say, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for your intelligence. And thank you for your books and your writings. And don't go away.